Saviors of the Islamic Spirit by Abul Hasan Ali Nadwi. Chapter 11. Shaykhul Islam Izzuddin ibn Abdul Salam. The heroic endeavors of Salahuddin, who set himself to work in the most earnest fashion with the reintroduction of orthodox doctrines of Islam in place of the Shia creed, the chain of educational institutions started for the purpose all over his wide realm, and above all, the personal example set by him and some of the Muslim rulers in the following the religious precepts and the code of moral conduct, redirected the energies of the people towards learning and teaching of the religious sciences. As a result thereof, we find several scholars during the 7th century who had devoted themselves, body and soul, to the dissemination of Islamic teachings among their compatriots. The most outstanding person among the savants was Shaykhul Islam Izzuddin ibn Abdul Salam, who died 660 AH. Reputed for profound learning, piety, and courage, he never compromised with the corrupting influences of his time and the degenerate ways of the then rulers. Erudition of Izzuddin. Izzuddin ibn Abdul Salam was born in Damascus in 578 AH. He had the honor of being a student of several eminent scholars of the day, such as Fakhruddin ibn Askar, Saifuddin Emidi, Hafiz Abu Muhammad al-Qasim. According to certain analysts, he started education quite late, but he soon acquired such a proficiency in the then sciences that his contemporaries have paid glowing tributes to his deep learning and brilliance of mind. Ibn Daqiq al-Eid calls him Sultan al-Ulama, that is the king of the scholars, in some of his works. When Izzuddin migrated to Egypt in 639 AH, Hafiz Abdul Azim al-Munziri, the writer of a certain book, suspended giving legal opinions. When he was asked for the reason for it, he said, "It does not behove any jurist to give legal opinions where Izzuddin happens to be present." Another scholar, Sheikh Jamaluddin ibn al-Hajib, was of the opinion that in fiqh, that is jurisprudence, Izzuddin excelled even Imam Ghazali. Al-Dhahabi writes in his book, quote, "In his knowledge of fiqh, devotion to religious and the awe of God, he had attained that degree of perfection which makes one capable of ijtihad, that is, interpreting the revealed law of God and of deducing new laws from the same." Izzuddin occupied the chair of professors for a fairly long period in the Madrasa Ghazaliya of Damascus, along with holding the office of Khatib and Imam in the principal mosque of the city called the Umayyad Mosque. Sheikh Shahab ud-Din Abu Shama relates that Izzuddin vehemently opposed the innovations and later day changes and the special prayers of mid-Shaban, which had become so popular in the time that several scholars of note thought that it was prudent to keep silence about these. Al-Malik al-Kamil insisted that Izzuddin, for accepting the office of Qadi in Damascus, which he accepted reluctantly after imposing a number of conditions. During the same period, Al-Malik al-Kamil appointed him as an envoy to the court of the Khalifa, which belonged to the Abbasid Empire. The righteousness of Izzuddin. Among the religious scholars of Syria, Izzuddin was held in such high esteem that he was received by the then king with the most honorable marks of distinction. On his own part, however, Izzuddin never visited the king unless he was requested to do so. Being dignified, straightforward, and self-respecting, he did not like to curry favors with the king. Instead, he insisted always upon the king to follow the course beneficial for Islam and the Muslims. During his illness, Sultan al-Malik al-Ashraf, who held the principality of Aleppo after the demise of his father, sent for Izzuddin. Earlier, the Sultan had some misunderstandings with the sheikh on account of certain views held by the sheikh, but the same were removed as a result of their meeting. The Sultan requested the sheikh to forgive him for his mistake and also to let him have a word of advice. "So far as the request for pardon is concerned," replied Izzuddin, "I forgive everyone with whom I happen to be displeased with, for I never allowed the sun to go down against anybody. Instead of seeking my recompense from the human beings, I desire it from God alone, as God has said, quote, but whosoever pardons and amends, his wage is the affair of Allah, unquote. As for the benediction for you," added Izzuddin, "I very often pray to God for the well-being of the Sultan, for this also means the welfare of Islam and also of the Muslims. God may grant the Sultan insight and understanding of the matters which may be helpful to him in the life to come. Now, coming to the advice, it is my duty to enjoin the right course since the Sultan has asked for it. I know that the Sultan is reputed for his valor and the brilliant victories he has won, but Tartars are making inroads into Islamic territories. They have been emboldened by the fact that the Sultan has pitched his arms against Al-Malik Al-Kamil, and thus he would not have the time to face the enemies of God and the persecutor of the Muslims. Al-Malik Al-Kamil is, however, the elder brother of the Sultan, and therefore I would request the Sultan to give up the idea of fighting his own brother. Instead, I would advise him to turn his forces against the enemies of Islam. The Sultan should make up his mind in these critical days of his illness to fight for the sake of God and for restoring the supremacy of his faith. We hope to overcome the infidels with the help of the Sultan if God restores him his health. This would verily be a great achievement, but if God had willed otherwise, the Sultan would undoubtedly be recompensed for his intention to come to the rescue of Islam." Al-Malik al-Ashraf thanked Izzuddin for his sincere advice and immediately issued orders redirecting his forces to face the Tartars instead of Al-Malik al-Kamil. As soon as the orders of the Sultan were communicated to the commander of his army, he retreated to Kasirah. On Al-Malik al-Ashraf's further request to counsel him something more, Izzuddin said, "The Sultan is bedridden, but his chiefs and officials are having rounds of pleasure. They are relieving in wine and the wickedness, while the Muslims are being burdened with new taxes. The most valuable presentation that Sultan can offer to God is that his cesspool of corruption is to be cleansed. Illegal imposts are abolished. Tyranny is stopped and the justice is made available to the people." Al-Malik al-Ashraf not only acted on the advice, but profusely thanked Izzuddin, saying, "May God give you a godly reward for performing the duty enjoined by the religion on behalf of all the Muslims, whose well-wisher you undoubtedly are. Allow me to be your companion, please, in paradise." The Sultan also presented 1,000 Egyptian gold mohr to Izzuddin, but he refused to accept any of them, saying, "I met you only for the sake of God, and I do not want any worldly temptations to be made an additional reason for meeting you." The courage of Izzuddin. Al-Malik al-Ashraf was succeeded by Saleh Ismail, who sought help of the Christians against the impending danger of the invasion from Egypt. In lieu of the aid promised by the Christians, the cities of Saida and Thaqif and few other forts were ceded to them. The friendly relations thus established by Saleh Ismail encouraged the Christians to purchase arms and ammunition from the Muslim traders in Damascus. Izzuddin deprecated these deals as the arms purchased by the Christians were likely to be used against the Muslims. And therefore, when the arms dealers asked for his legal opinion in his matter, he advised that all such bargains were prohibited by the Sharia. This was not all. Izzuddin gave up benedictions for the king in the Friday sermons and started invoking the wrath of God on the enemies of Islam. The matter was brought to the notice of the king, who ordered to imprison him. After some time, he was transferred to Jerusalem from his Damascus jail. In the meantime, Saleh Ismail, along with his allies Al-Malik Al-Mansur, the king of Homs, and a few Christian monarchs, converged at Jerusalem with the intention of invading Egypt. Although Saleh Ismail had imprisoned Izzuddin, he was feeling guilty in his heart and wanted to set him free, provided Izzuddin was prepared to give him an excuse for it. He therefore gave his handkerchief to one of the trusted counselors with the instruction that he should present it to Izzuddin and tell him courteously that if he desired, his previous position would be restored. The counselor was also directed to present Izzuddin before the king in case he agreed to the suggestion with the highest respect, therefore to imprison him in the tent beside that of the king. The counselor did what he was commissioned to do, paid his compliments and related the admiration of the king for the sheikh, and then said, "Everything will be set right and your previous position will be restored in no time if you just kiss the hands of the king and show courtesy to him." History can perhaps offer very few striking examples of fearless expression, for Izzuddin replied, "What a fool you are! You expect me to kiss the hands of a king, while I would not like my own hands to be kissed by this king. My friend, you are living in a world other than that of mine. Praise be to Allah that I am not a prey to the temptations which have captured your soul." The counselor then told him that in that case he had orders to imprison him again. The sheikh was accordingly placed under confinement in a tent beside the king's, who heard him daily recite the Quran. The king one day told his Christian ally that the person whom he heard reciting the Quran at the moment was the chief pontiff of the Muslims, but he had been divested of the post and honors and kept under confinement because his oppression to the succession of cities and forts to the Christians. The Christian monarch, however, replied that if he were such a man as his bishop, he would have felt honored to sit at his feet. Shortly thereafter, Saleh Ismail was defeated and killed in an encounter with the Christian forces, and Izzuddin was honorably taken to Egypt. While on his way to Egypt, Izzuddin passed through the principality of Kark. When its governor requested Izzuddin to settle inside Kark, he replied, "This small city of yours is not benefiting my learning." Izzuddin in Egypt. Izzuddin was received by the then Sultan of Egypt, Al-Malik Al-Saleh Najm ud-Din Ayyub. With the great reverence and honor, he was appointed Khatib at the mosque Amr bin As, as well as the Grand Qadi of Egypt. He was also entrusted with the task of looking after the rehabilitation of deserted mosques and the professorship of the Shafi'i jurisprudence in Madrasa Salihiyya founded by the king. The fearlessness of Izzuddin. A man by the name of Fakhruddin Usman, who was an intendant of the palace, had come to wield a great influence over the king. This man got a drum house constructed over the roof of the mosque. When Izzuddin came to know of it, he ordered the structure of the drum house to be pulled down. He declared Fakhruddin Uthman as an unreliable witness for the purposes of tendering evidence in a court of law, and also resigned from the post of chief justice as a mark of protest against the blasphemous actions of Fakhruddin Uthman. Izzuddin continued to enjoy the esteem of the king, who however did not consider it prudent to appoint Izzuddin as Grand Qadi for the second time. Notwithstanding this decision of the king, juristic opinions tendered by Izzuddin were acted upon the same respect before and after the period. During this period, Al-Malik Al-Saleh Najmuddin Ayyub sent an embassy to the court of the Khalifa in Baghdad. When the Egyptian envoy was presented before the Khalif, he inquired of the envoy if the Sultan of Egypt had himself commissioned the conveyance of this message. On being told that he had been charged to convey the message by Fakhruddin Uthman on behalf of the Sultan, the Caliph replied that since Fakhruddin Uthman has been declared an unreliable witness by Izzuddin, no credence would be placed on a message conveyed through him. The envoy had to return to Egypt to obtain the orders of the Sultan anew and afresh. There is yet another incident which speaks of Izzuddin's fearlessness. When the Sultan was holding a darbar on the occasion of Eid, was seated on the throne in a large reception hall with the princes and chiefs of state ranged on his right and the courtiers and dignitaries on his left. In front of the Sultan stood all the people entitled to enter and salute the sovereign when the voice was suddenly heard addressing the Sultan by his first name, Ayyub. What would be your reply before God when he would ask you whether the kingdom of Egypt was given to you so that the people would openly indulge in drinking bouts and you should enjoy public receptions? Is it, blurted out Sultan, who was taken aback, is it a fact? Yes, came a reply from Izzuddin. Wine is being freely sold and consumed in a city while the people indulge in other vices too. Surprised as the Sultan was, he replied, but it's not my fault, sir, for it has been happening from the time of my father held the reins of this kingdom. Then you are one of those, admonished Izzuddin, who say that we found our fathers acting on the vice, as mentioned in the Quran. The Sultan immediately gave orders to stop the sale of wine in his entire kingdom. While returning from the court, one of the pupils of Izzuddin asked him why he had raised the question on that occasion. Izzuddin replied, when I see the Sultan surrounded by that pomp and show, I thought that he might give himself airs and become a slave to his baser self. I therefore thought that it is necessary to admonish him publicly. But were you not seized with fright? Demanded the disciple further. Oh no, replied Izzuddin. I was seized by the awe and glory of God Almighty that Sultan appeared as meek as a cat in front of him. Izzuddin in the battlefield. These were the days when the decisions amongst the Muslim monarchs had again created a situation favorable for the crusaders, who unleashed their swords to take an offense against Mansura in Egypt. Izzuddin accompanied the forces sent to retrieve the city from the Christians. A chronicler of the time writes that Izzuddin's prayer for the success of the Muslim forces was readily answered by God. The reinforcements of the crusaders could not reach them as their ships were taken by a gale which submerged quite a few of them. The Mongols, who had started raiding and plundering Muslim territories by then, once there was an imminent danger of Mongol invasion of Egypt. But the Sultan and his commanders were so disheartened that they could not muster the courage to face the Mongols. Izzuddin encouraged the Sultan to fight the Mongols. He even assured the Sultan of the success against the Mongols. At last, the Sultan agreed to his suggestion, but he was facing paucity of funds. He sought the advice of Izzuddin about raising the necessary finances through loans from businessmen. Izzuddin, however, advised, first bring the ornaments of your women folk and those of your dignitaries and the nobles have in their possession. These are all prohibited by the Sharia and should be used for meeting the expenses of the expedition. And if you still need money, then you can raise it through loans. Surprising though it may seem, the king and his nobles brought out without a demur all their jewelry and valuables they possessed as the sheikh had directed. The riches brought forth were enough to meet the expenses of raising an adequate force to face the Mongols, who were defeated by the Egyptian army as predicted by Izzuddin. A still more surprising incident of the sheikh's life, described by the historians, relates to his insistence upon auctioning those dignitaries of the Sultan's court whom he held to be property of the state's exchequer, since they happened to be the slaves who had not been emancipated in accordance with the provisions of the Sharia. These chiefs of states were recruited as royal levies from the Turkish Memluks or slaves, but had risen to the position of authority and wielded great influence on the government of Egypt. One of them even held the post of the minister of the Sultan. Izzuddin pronounced the juristic opinion that these chiefs were still slaves in accordance with the rules of the Sharia, and they should be treated as such until they were formally emancipated. The population of Egypt immediately ceased cooperating with these chiefs and dignitaries who were placed in such a position that they had to call upon the sheikh and to inquire what he proposed to do with them. Izzuddin, however, told them plainly that he would sell them in a public auction on behalf of the state treasury, and therefore they would be emancipated as provided by the Sharia. They appealed to the Sultan, who also tried, as the analysts have recorded, to placate Izzuddin, but he remained adamant. During the discussions on the subject, the Sultan told Izzuddin that he should not concern himself with the affairs of the state, and also said something, as has been reported, which was taken badly by Izzuddin. The Sheikh returned to his house and announced his decision to leave Egypt immediately. The news spread like wildfire, and an overwhelming majority of its population decided to follow Izzuddin and migrate with him. The matter was brought to the justice of the Sultan, who was told that if Izzuddin went away from Egypt, his kingdom would come to an end. Extremely worried by the fastly deteriorating situation, Sultan himself went to bring Izzuddin back to the city, who had then left it with a large section of its inhabitants. The Sultan had at length to give in to Izzuddin, who was allowed to auction the chiefs. The Mamluk ministers, however, still tried to dissuade the Sheikh, but failing in his efforts, decided to slay Izzuddin. He went into his entourage, sword in hand, to the house of Izzuddin and knocked at the door. The son of Izzuddin, who came out to answer the call, went in and told his father what he had seen, but the Sheikh calmly said, "My son, your father is not lucky enough to be slain in the way of God." Izzuddin came out without the slightest fear on his face. As soon as the minister saw Izzuddin, he was overtaken by flutter, and the sword fell from his hand. With tears in his eyes, he humbly repeated the question, "My lord, what do you want to do with us?" Izzuddin replied, "I will auction you. And where will you spend the sale proceeds?" The Sheikh replied, "On the welfare of the Muslims." The minister asked again, "Who will collect the sale price?" Izzuddin replied, "I myself." The minister at last agreed to be sold by the Sheikh, who auctioned him along with other Mamluks. As a mark of respect to the position held by these dignitaries, the Sheikh fixed a very high price for each and asked them to deposit the sale price. The money thus collected by Izzuddin was spent on the welfare projects, while the chiefs were granted their warrants of emancipation. The historian Ibn Subqi writes, "Such an incident was never heard of earlier about anyone. This is perhaps the only example of its kind recorded by history about the deference and veneration ever accorded to any scholar." Izzuddin and the Kings of Egypt. Egypt witnessed quite a few political upheavals during Izzuddin's stay in the country. When he arrived in Egypt, a monarch of Salahuddin's dynasty, Al-Malik Al-Saleh Najmuddin Ayyub, was ruling the country. He was succeeded by his son, Al-Malik Al-Muazzim Turan Shah, after whom the Turkish chiefs seized the reins of government. They too held Izzuddin in high esteem, while the celebrated Turk Sultan Al-Malik Al-Zahir Baybars was especially devoted to the Sheikh. It was on the advice of Izzuddin that Baybar invited Abul Qasim Ahmad, the uncle of the last Khalifa Mu'tasim Billah, who had escaped the massacre by the Mongols, to Cairo and acknowledged him as Khalifa under the title Al-Muntasir Billah. The first to take the oath of allegiance was Izzuddin. Next came Sultan Baybars, followed by the Chief Justice, Qazi Tajuddin, the principal sheikhs, and the nobles. The moral rectitude of Izzuddin. Izzuddin was such as much celebrated for his generosity, kindness, and humanity as for his profound knowledge and piety. The Chief Qazi Badruddin Ibn Jama'a relates that when Izzuddin was still in Damascus, a slump in the price once overtook the market. When the price of the groves had suffered a steep fall, the wife of Izzuddin gave him an ornament to purchase a grove so that they might spend the summer in it. Izzuddin sold the ornament and gave the proceeds in charity. Later on, when his wife asked if he had purchased the grove, Izzuddin replied, "Yes, but in paradise, I saw many poor people in great distress and I spent the money on them." His wife thanked God for the good act of Izzuddin. Qazi Badruddin also has written that Izzuddin gave as freely when he was poor as when happened to be rich. When he had nothing to give to a beggar, he would give a portion of his turban. Izzuddin was equally courageous and truthful against his own self as against the kings and the nobles. Ibn al-Subhi and Ibn al-Suyuti write that once during his stay in Egypt, Izzuddin made a certain mistake in his jurisprudence opinion given by him. As soon as he came to know of his mistake, he got an announcement made that the people should not act on that opinion since it was wrong. Ibn al-Subhi relates that Izzuddin had been favored with inner enlightenment, his fearlessness, disregard for worldly power, fame, riches, and above all, unflinching faith and trust in God showed that he had attained the sublimeness of spirit. Ibn al-Subhi records Izzuddin was a disciple of the famous spiritual mentor, Sheikh Sahabuddin Suharwadi, who was authorized him to guide others in the mystic path. Izzuddin had also the opportunity of meeting and remaining in the company of another reputed mystic, Sheikh Abul Hasan Sazli. The righteousness of Izzuddin. Izzuddin preached an act on the Quranic dictum, commanding to enjoin the right and forbid the wrong, no matter what dangers and hardships one might have to face for it. In one of his letters addressed to Sultan al-Malik al-Ashraf, he wrote, "What we claim is that we are partisans, friends, and helpers, or rather the troopers of Allah, and no one can lay claim to be a combatant unless he is willing to expose himself to danger." In Izzuddin's view, the knowledge and eloquence of a scholar constituted his two weapons, which should be fully utilized in the fight for righteousness. In another letter to the Sultan, Izzuddin had written, "God had enjoined upon us to strive and fight for his religion. Just as you have your swords and lances for your arms, we have our knowledge and parlance. And as it does not benefit you to sheath your sword, similarly we cannot hold our tongue against innovators and apostates and sinners." Izzuddin considered it imperative for the scholars to be ever willing to face dangers in the discharge of their sacred obligation and to enjoin the right, cost whatever may come. Thus, he vehemently disagreed with those religious scholars who did not consider it lawful to expose themselves to avoidable dangers. His commentary on the Quranic verse, quote, "And be not cast by your own hands to ruin," amply bears out his point of view in this regard. To risk one's life for the honor and dominance of the faith is permitted by the Sharia, he writes. Quote, "It is rather enjoined on all able-bodied people to wage a war in the path of God and to fight the infidels. So it is lawful to expose oneself to danger under the provisions of the Sharia for enjoining the right and forbidding the wrong. However, if anyone feels that he might lose his life in the venture, the command loses its obligatory character for him, but it is nevertheless a commendable act. Thus, they are definitely wrong who think that it is not lawful to risk one's life for the purpose. In short, if anybody gives preference to himself over God, God will give preference to others over him. If anybody seeks the pleasure of God at the cost of offending others, God will not only bless him, but also make others to be pleased with him. And if anybody, on the other hand, wants to gratify others by displeasing God, he will be displeased with him and also cause others to be disappointed with him." An Arab poet has rightly expressed the same idea in the verse. "I won't care, howsoever troublesome my life may be, if I were only to gain your love. May you be pleased with me, even if this annoys the entire world." Izzuddin lived up to his ideals and never hesitated to sacrifice his health or home, life or honor for what he believed to be correct and righteous path enjoined by the Sharia. The writings of Izzuddin. Izzuddin was a famous scholar, broad-minded jurist, and a successful teacher. In penmanship too, he was equally celebrated, his two well-known works being Kitab Majaz al-Qur'an and Al-Qawa'id al-Kubra. Ibn Subki writes about these books. These books of Izzuddin mark him as an outstanding scholar of profound knowledge in religious sciences. Izzuddin later summarized both the above-mentioned books. Ibn Subki has also praised his other two books. In addition to these writings, one more book of Izzuddin by the name Maqsad al-Salat was widely read during his life. Thousands of its copies were made out by the people. Izzuddin also left voluminous connections of juristic opinions pronounced by him, which is regarded as a valuable collection of legal opinions according to the Shafi'i school of jurisprudence. Izzuddin was perhaps the next scholar after Imam Ghazali in Islam who set forth to define and de-alienate the objectives of religious observances and the benefits accruing from the performances enjoined by the Sharia. In the introduction to his famous treatise Hujjatullah al-Baligha, Shah Waliullah Muhaddith al-Dahlavi, the greatest authority on the subject, has acknowledged his debt to three masters, Imam al-Ghazali, Abu Sulaiman Khatabi, and Izzuddin. The death of Izzuddin. Izzuddin died in the 83rd year of his age on the 9th Jamadil Awal, 660 AH. Al-Malik al-Zain Baybars, the then king of Egypt, accompanied the funeral of the sheikh along with the dignitaries and the chiefs. The king was very much aggrieved that the sheikh's death was destined to occur during his reign. Witnessing the mammoth funeral procession passing by the side of the royal castle, the king said to one of his counselors, "My kingdom would have been nowhere if this man decided to oppose me. He would have verily won the hearts of all the people." Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.